Okay, perfect. All right, back on the record. It is November 6, 2024, 1 o'clock p.m. We're in the Arborwood Administrative Appeal, PLN 22-02653. I'm Phil Albrechts, Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. We are now at the point in the hearing where we're going to be hearing from the applicant's witnesses. One other little scheduling point, kind of a big scheduling error on my part. I booked a flight at a different time than I thought I had booked it. So if we could finish at 4:30 today instead of 5, that would be really helpful and get me to the airport an hour before my flight. So that'll be a little bit of a scramble for me, but hopefully that'll work for everybody. So anyway, Ms. Koski, who do you have as your first witness out there?
Yes, I'd like to start. We weren't expecting Mr. Telligen to finish today since he still had other witnesses listed and it said he would need the full 2 days. So we had to scramble a bit to find witnesses available to start today. For that reason, we'll be presenting in a slightly disjointed order, but please bear with us. We'd like to remind the hearing examiner that appellants have the burden of proof here, that they have to show the county's conclusions in the revised CABR were arbitrary and capricious. Taylor Morrison's evidence will show that the small part of the spine road that relocated on remand complies with county code and that they fill and any fill placed in the buffers is not impervious, but is instead designed to mimic pre-development hydrology and cause only temporary impact. We have one witness prepared to testify today. Gary Charmbroy is a civil engineer and partner at Core Design, who has worked on this project. He will testify on the application of the county's road standards to the section of the spine road at issue in this litigation. He'll also explain how the recommendations made in the TIA report will be incorporated into construction plans and changes made between the first CABR and the revised CABR. We hope to have a second witness available to testify today if we get that far, Mr. Christopher Wright. Mr. Wright is a soil and wetland scientist who will explain wetland and wetland buffer impacts and mitigation techniques. We did not receive the chart Ms. Cook testified to prior to her testimony. We provided that chart to Mr. Wright. We won't know until the conclusion of our first witness whether he felt like he had sufficient time to review it and is prepared to testify today, or whether we need to hold that until Friday.
I'm sorry, did you say you did not receive it, or you did?
We have it now, but we didn't have
Oh.
it before he testified. And so we just want to make sure he has time where he's comfortable if he needs to address anything that was raised there, that he has time to do that. We'll check in with him after the conclusion of this first witness if we still have time and see if he's prepared to start today or if that needs to wait till Friday.
Okay.
Our first witness would have been Mr. Pete Lamberis, president of Taylor Morrison. He's also unavailable today, but is slated to start things off on Friday. As you're aware, Taylor Morrison has also presented exhibits describing conceptual stormwater design plans, and Curtis Koger on Friday will describe those plans and describe how they will ensure placement of fill will mimic pre-development hydrologic conditions. From our other witnesses, you will also hear evidence that the TIA report is consistent with those recommendations, accommodates for them, and they can be implemented during stormwater design process. You will also hear from a wetland consultant who evaluated on-site wetlands and prepared the mitigation plan that was incorporated into the revised CABR, and the revised CABR and proposed stormwater infrastructure design will allow hydrologic conditions to mimic pre-development conditions at the site, and that if real-world conditions require adjustments, those adjustments will be made. If the hearing examiner has no other questions, my colleague Liberty Kiwis will be conducting direct examination of our witnesses.
Okay, let me swear in, Mr. Schombroy. Sir, raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great. All right, go ahead, Ms. Cuis.
I can't hear you.
Oh, yeah, we're not hearing anything, Ms. Cuis, from your side.
How about that? Is that
There we go. We got you now.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Charmbroy, what is your current occupation?
I'm a civil engineer and principal at Core Design.
Can you describe your post-high school education, please?
Sure. I spent 2 years at Willamette University and then transferred to Oregon State University to finish my Bachelor of Science degree in civil engineering.
And can you describe your professional experience?
I joined Core Design, which was then Dodge Engineers, pretty much right out of school in 1988. Since that time, I've worked on hundreds of mainly residential developments, also some commercial industrial developments, but many flats and multifamily projects.
And what type of projects do you typically work on at Core? Can you
I'm having
Oh, we're
problems with
losing you
your
again
audio
with
again.
squeeze. Yeah.
How about now?
There we go.
There we
Yeah.
go.
Okay, sorry. I just need to make sure I'm on the right microphone setting. Okay. Can you describe how many residential, large-scale residential development projects you've worked on at Core?
I guess that depends on the what you mean by large. If it's including multiple plats or developments of several hundred units, there's at least seven or eight large master plans I've worked on over those years.
And are you familiar with the Arborwood development that's at issue in this limited remand?
I am.
And how so?
We were hired by Taylor Morrison to do some feasibility work initially, and then the design work, as well as some survey work.
And when did you or CORE begin working on the Arbor project?
Sometime in the fall of 2021.
And how has CORE been involved with the project?
Like I said, we did some initial feasibility and layout work for them on the lots to modify the approved preliminary plat for what product they wanted to put on it. We did some, we've been involved in the plat modifications that have been proposed and approved with the county, and we are currently doing final design on the remainder of the site.
And can you describe what your specific role has been with the project?
I'm the project manager on it, so I oversee the staff and the preparation of the plan.
Are you responsible for the stormwater design and infrastructure?
Overall, I am, but I have relied on staff to do the technical work on that and manage that, and particularly Michael Moody, who you'll come later.
And have you reviewed the 2009 preliminary plat for this development?
I have.
And why did you review that document?
The preliminary plat lays out the conditions under which the development was originally approved, so that was important for moving forward.
And have you reviewed the minor amendments to the preliminary plat?
I have.
And why did you review those documents?
The initial one was prepared by some other consultants before we were involved, so that was important to again look at conditions that were potentially modified by that amendment, and then the subsequent amendments we were also involved in preparing, so we were intimately involved with that.
And have you reviewed the Arborwood development agreement?
Yes.
And again, why did you review that document?
Again, because there's conditions that are outlined in that are applicable to the design of the site.
Have you reviewed the version of the Kitsap County Code that this project is vested to?
Yes.
And why did you review that code?
Again, for preparation of the plans and meeting the code that's required for the approval of them.
Can you describe your experience with infrastructure design in the context of road and road planning?
Infrastructure design? Are you questioning utilities? Is that what you're, or just overall?
Just building a road, such as the Spine Road through.
Well, yeah, nearly every development that we work on requires either construction of new roadways or modifications of existing roadways. So I would say 90, 95% of the sites we work on involve designing or modifying roadways.
Do you have experience designing roadways in Kitsap County?
Most of my experience is on Arborwood. I have helped with some preliminary designs on other sites that have not gone to final design in my involvement.
And what standards or specifications apply to the design and construction of a road in Kitsap County?
The Kitsap County Road Standards and Kitsap County Code.
And do you know who prepares those standards?
County staff, to my knowledge.
And in general, can you describe what standards are applicable to the design and construction of a road on a site similar to Arborwood?
Well, that would depend on the jurisdiction you're in, the road standards for that jurisdiction. And typically they also, in this area, reference WashDOT or Washington State DOT standards for a lot of materials and methods that they just incorporate those because that's kind of the accepted standard for this area.
Why does a road need to be designed and constructed in accordance with the applicable standards?
For a few reasons. One, the first and foremost is that it is safe so that the geometry of it allows for someone to travel that road safely. And then also it is designed for the appropriate traffic volumes that are be expected. So we get that information from the traffic engineers and that'll determine potentially what the widths of it have to be. And then again, we have to design it to their standards so that it minimizes their maintenance responsibilities in the future.
And you mentioned the WashDOT standards, and then we've been discussing the Kitsap County road standards as well. Mm-hmm. Are there any other relevant specifications or designs that the Spine Road would have to comply with?
The Kitsap County road standards specifically reference several from WashDOT and from ASHTO as well. The American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. And also there's the ADA specifications for the federal that may come into play if you're doing accessible routes. So there's several of those things that are referenced within the Kitsap County standards.
In applying all of those standards, are there any other factors or considerations that need to be taken into account when you're designing a road?
Yeah, there's many. When you're looking at the site, first of all, you're looking at topography and the where you need to provide access to the development you're working on. And that can be restricted by slope and grades. Topography of the site, sensitive areas within the site with steep slopes or wetlands or other critical areas. It could also, there could be utility constraints where you have to convey sewer storm or water to a particular point that could constrain the site. And also there's emergency vehicle access, which frequently dictates where you have to provide access to or from.
Does the emergency vehicle access typically, is that typically required at a certain time of development?
It depends. It's usually when on a larger site like this, there's a certain threshold of occupation that they'll allow. They don't want to have a certain number of people or homes stranded with only one access. That's typically what happens. So you may have to provide a secondary access before you're allowed to build any more homes.
Do you know if there's a condition in any of the Arborwood entitlements up until now that require the spine roads to be built at a specific time?
There is.
And can you describe what that is if you recall?
Sure. Just as I described, there's a limitation of 100 homes that are allowed before the secondary access, which is provided from Spine Road A specifically from the north to the south.
And moving on to the Caber, what is a critical area buffer reduction?
Just as it states, it's the methods in which you are allowed to reduce the buffers that are required by code in order to provide the development you're looking for. There are certain rules and regulations you have to meet in order to do that.
Can you describe your involvement, if any, in the first Caber appeal?
I testified in the first Caber appeal.
And can you describe your involvement with the revised Caber that was submitted to the county?
We provided exhibits for the relocation of Spine Road A in the area around Wetland P2. And some sections through that area.
And when you say we, are you referring to CORE?
CORE, yes, myself and some and staff.
What parts of the project changed after the first CABR was remanded?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
What parts of the project changed after the first CABR was remanded?
Like I said, we relocated a portion of Spine Road A to provide some additional buffer that was required. We also changed some of the buffer lines. We didn't change necessarily the improvements that were proposed in other areas, but we provided additional setbacks from those. So the buffer lines changed a little bit. That's all that we were involved in.
What information was submitted to the county in support of the revised CABR?
That we provided or in total? We provided an exhibit that showed the relocation of the roadway to provide the required buffer for P2.
And if we could please pull up, Ms. Koski, if we could pull up exhibit F14, please. Thank you. And can you see this, Mr. Sharbrook?
Yep.
And this is titled Letter to Steve Heacock, Vanna Spellman, re supplemental reports for permit app 22-02629. Have you seen this document before?
I have.
And what is it?
It's a letter from your office summarizing the responses to the CABR appeal or the appeal of the remand.
And you didn't write this letter, right?
No, I did not.
If we could please go to page 2 of this exhibit. Thank you. And under, excuse me, can you see the 3 bullet points that are in the middle where it says the enclosed materials include?
Yes.
And can you just describe what is listed in the bullet points?
Sure. The first one is the exhibit that we prepared that shows the horizontal location of the spine road that was modified. Then it also lists the supplemental critical areas report that ELS provided and the supplemental information from Terra Associates for the fill specifications.
Was this the only information that was submitted to the county after the remand?
To my knowledge.
And other than the site plan, did you prepare any of the documents that are listed here?
No.
If we could please go to exhibit F17. And if we could zoom out a little bit, please. Thank you. This is titled the Arborwood North Spine Road A Extension. Have you seen this document before?
Yes, I have.
And what is this document?
This is the first bullet point item in that letter. It's the modified location, horizontal location of the roadway to provide the buffer.
And you referred to this as a horizontal design. What is a horizontal design?
It's a two-dimensional design, so it's just the as you're looking straight down on the site, this is what it would look like. It doesn't include any vertical elements to it, no vertical curves or anything.
And can you generally describe what the site plan is showing? Meaning, if you could orient us to, you know, north, south, any features we've been talking about, please.
Sure, it's the center of the site. Near wetland P2, which has been talked about extensively in this appeal. It's showing the expansion of the buffer as required to 100 feet. We've also shown there's a 17-foot setback from that to the edge of the sidewalk trail that's required. That will allow for the installation of guardrails and what have you as well. and then also the roadway itself and how it is located within the right-of-way that's provided.
And if we could just zoom in a little bit on the portion where it shows the wetland P2 buffer, please. Thank you. And can you describe, you touched on this a little bit, but since we're zoomed in a little bit now, can you describe the location of the spine road relative to wetland P2?
Sure. The backside of the road trail that's required, that is now adjacent to the roadway, is 17 feet from the edge of the proposed buffer.
Why is the spine road located here?
The original design we had followed exactly what was in the preliminary plat. That's what we started with, and that's what was approved for the preliminary plat. There's the right-of-way that is shown here, and there's also to the east of the road a 50-foot buffer that is set aside to allow physical separation and buffering from the neighborhood to the east. So we are locating the roadway within that proposed right-of-way that's designated.
And when you said the neighborhood to the east, is that the Hillbend neighborhood?
Yes, it is.
Before this current design, did the location of the spine road change during your involvement with the project?
Before when?
Before you be, excuse me. Before, we're looking at this current design right now. Before this current design, did the location of the spine road move at all?
Not to my knowledge. We obtained the approved preliminary plat and utilized that line work to propose our original design.
Can the spine road be moved any further outside of the wetland P2 setback and buffer area?
Technically, it's probably possible. You can see it's getting extremely close to the that 50-foot buffer. If it was pushed any further into that, there's going to be further grading and tree removal in that area. And also, we'd have to do an expansion of the right-of-way, which would probably require another minor modification to the preliminary plat. So what we've shown here is what we feel. You can also see a 5-foot kind of a track that's shown in there. That is to allow for the construction of any necessary retaining walls that might be required to hold upgrade. Although we've changed the grade enough so that we don't need them in that area specifically all the way through. I think it's a little bit longer than it needs to be, but we do need it up in the north end for sure. So it could it slide another foot or two? Maybe. It's just you're going to impact that buffer more and more. The buffer to the east that's buffering the neighbors.
Is the design of the spine road that's shown in exhibit F-17 consistent with the county's road standards?
Yes, it is.
And is the design of the spine road that's shown in exhibit F-17 consistent with WSDOT standards?
As applied in the Kitsap County Code, yes, it is.
What other approvals are needed before the spine road can be built?
There are two bridges on either end, north and south of this, that will need to be approved and permitted. There's also the construction drawings, the SDAP, as everybody's been referring to, the SDAP that needs to be approved for the construction of this road and the remainder of the road and development.
What is an SDAP?
Site Development Activity Permit. It's the development permit. That's the title that the Kitsap County gives to their development, their final civil design development permits.
And the SDAP will come after the CABR, is that right?
Yes, the CABR doesn't permit any construction activities at all. It simply lays out the conditions under which that they are additional conditions that may not be in the preliminary plat or other documentation. So the SDAP is essential. It's the mechanism to allow construction.
Is this the final design of the spine road?
It's our intention that it is the final design, but it has not been approved. So that's still up for review.
What changes have been made to the design of the spine road since you prepared and submitted this site plan to the county?
This site plan, we've not only modified the grading and alignment of the road here to match this horizontal location, it also necessitated removing a ditch on the uphill side of it to minimize, again, the impacts to the buffer area. We're anticipating now putting in a French drain along the east side of the road to pick up any surface drainage that may come down from that direction. And then there's conveyance changes, obviously, with the realignment of the road, the geometry of the road.
Can you describe the typical construction process for a road such as Spine Road A?
Sure. There's typically the clearing and grading where they're removing, you know, any trees and vegetation and organic material. And then there'll be rough grading, placement of materials within the road area, either cuts or fills. Those are compacted as required and inspected by the geotechs to make sure that they're stable. And then any utilities that may have to be installed will be installed accordingly. And once all that is done and approved, they'll put in the road subbase materials and the final asphalt, curbing, sidewalks, what have you. And any final landscaping or street lighting, other appurtenances that may be required.
And is that the construction process that the spine road will follow?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
When you or someone who is on site doing construction, are there any unexpected circumstances that arise?
Sure, it happens frequently.
Can you describe what some of those might be?
Sure. In constructing a roadway, there a lot of times if we're near existing utilities, we may end up with conflicts there that we have to make adjustments to either road locations or utility locations or depths in an area like this. When the road is rough cut in, it'll be proof rolled, and sometimes they find materials that are not structural and have to be over excavated and replaced with something that is more suitable so that it'll hold up the road base. Those are common. We could also, in a road cut, we could discover that there's a seepage or some water, groundwater that needs to be handled or addressed or redirected in some form or fashion. So that's also something that happens now and then.
If we could go to exhibit B13, please. And this is titled Core Design Spine Road Profile. Have you seen this document before?
Yes.
And what is it?
It's a rough grading of this area, the same area we're just looking at, with some sections that were drawn through it that shows the cut and fill. Basically, if the road was rough graded out to put in the final road prism. So just a rough conceptual cut fill section through the site in several locations.
Why did you prepare this document?
I believe it was a request from either the geotech or from wetland biologists to show typical fill depths at points at the top of the fill and at the proposed buffer edge.
If we could please go to exhibit B14. Have you seen this document before?
I have.
And what is it?
It's another section similar to the ones on the other page, but this one shows a little more detail. It's still conceptual in nature, but it was intended to show the potential to add a more pervious layer underneath the fill to address some findings that came in from one of the other consultants here recently.
This is Mr. Telligen. This is one of the exhibits that we had objected to at the beginning of the hearing. At this point, I think all I'd like to say is if we're going to begin discussing it, I don't know if I may need additional time after Mr. Schoenbroy testifies to discuss with my consultants to cross-examine relating to it. I don't know what I'll talk about, but this is one of the ones that I had objected to.
Okay. All right. And like I mentioned before, I think that I wasn't going to probably be excluding these documents. It would just be an issue of giving sufficient time to the appellants to respond to them. I'll go ahead and what's the exhibit number of this one again?
This is B14.
B14, did you say?
B as in
boy. Yeah, B14. Okay. Yeah, I'll admit that. And I think in terms of Mr. Telgen needing time to, additional time to cross-examine or something like that, I think once Mr. Charmbro is done with his testimony, we can figure out what to do on that issue.
Thanks.
And just one more question on this exhibit, Mr. Charmboy. Why is the fill needed?
The fill is needed to support the construction of the roadway and the trail is required.
My apologies. One more question. Is it typical for fill to be used as part of a road construction process?
It's used on nearly every road, unless it's all in cut. It's typically you're needing to fill some low areas in order to reach the grade that you need to build the road.
And we can go ahead and take this exhibit down. Have you reviewed the TERRA report with recommendations regarding fill specifications for the site?
I have.
Are the recommendations and specifications that are contained in the TERRA report the type of information that you typically rely on during road construction and infrastructure development?
It's supplemental information to the report that we would receive normally. Oftentimes, and there are certain situations where there's specific fill requirements or material requirements that are outlined by the geotech. So yes, in that regard, it is standard.
What is the purpose of following those types of recommendations and specifications?
It could be different things. It could be, in this case, provide hydraulic conductivity within the soils, or it could be stability issues. It could be any number of things that had related to geotechnical concerns on site.
From an engineering perspective, what would you need to do to implement the recommendations and specifications that are in the TERRA report?
We'd have to indicate where they apply and provide those specifications or references to them on the plans.
And what plans are you referring to?
The SDAP, the final development plans.
And do you have any concerns with implementing the recommendations and specifications in the TERRA report?
No.
Is it typical to make on-site adjustments to recommendations and specifications that are provided by a geotechnical consultant?
Yes, it's very common.
And why is that?
site conditions that are discovered. The geotechnical reports typically rely on a sampling of test locations throughout the site. So they're making their best guess estimate on what the underlying conditions are. And, you know, in this area, it's very common that you discover something that is not expected, and you have to potentially over excavate or change materials or make some other adjustment that might be applicable for that condition.
And if we could pull up exhibit F18, please, and go to page 34 of that exhibit. And if we could scroll up to the top, please. Yeah, thank you. So we heard some testimony that there will be impervious surface and there won't be any vegetation in the shaded, in the not fully orange section. Do you recall that testimony, Mr. Charmbroy?
Yes.
And was that related to the portion of the orange that curves and then there's the smaller portion underneath?
In my recollection, it was associated with areas that were not included in the orange. And insinuating that those areas would not be vegetated at all, and that which is not the case.
And so what is your understanding of what will happen within that area?
My understanding is that the requirements shown on this plan are simply for that, specifically for that orange area, but don't preclude using that same coverage in other places. And the areas outside, not just only that other dashed slope area by the road, but any other sloped area is going to have some form of a vegetation or stabilization that will be applied to it. It just may not have to follow the specific planting requirements here for buffer addition.
Thank you. I have no further
questions. Buffer rehabilitation or whatever that's for.
Okay. Mr. Telton, what about cross then? Can you do it now or do you need time with your client or your witnesses, I should say?
I can do it now. I guess I just had a question for Ms. Kihis. Or Kihis. Was Mr. Charmbroy the only person who was going to be talking about exhibit B14, or was that just sort of to lay the foundation for its admission?
He is not the only person who will be testifying about that exhibit. He was just laying foundation.
Okay. And I didn't find his very substantive. More people will talk about what it means and Correct. What the intent is. Okay. Very good. Let's see here. So good afternoon, Mr. Charmbroy. Thank you for being here. I'm the counsel for the appellants in this case. You mentioned that you're a civil engineer. Do you have engineering work designing permeable road bases?
I have designed them in the past, yes. It's limited in this area.
Okay. You talked about doing feasibility work for Taylor Morrison,
mm-hmm.
or determining feasibility. What goes into a feasibility analysis?
Well, when a client is looking at purchasing a piece of property, they want to know that that the product and the yield that they are anticipating is reasonable. They want to know what all the potential expenditures, utility, easement purchases, the extent. They want to just basically find out all the costs that they may have to incur to make sure that this purchase is feasible.
So when you're looking at that, are you looking at any sort of regulatory feasibility, like it will cost you this much because we're going to, the regs require us to do X, Y, and Z, and here's how many units we can, to figure out like how many units you can put on given the regulatory requirements that are in place?
Sure. And if this was a raw piece of ground and there wasn't an underlying preliminary plat, that's definitely what we would do is is go right to that, and we would have a wetland biologist define the wetland edges and give us all those constraints. In this case, there was already an approved preliminary plat and development agreement, so most of the work went into reviewing that and defining or verifying the some of the assumptions they had already made, or looking at some of the costs they may have to incur to do improvements to build what they were anticipating building.
Mm-hmm. As part of your feasibility analysis for this project, did you evaluate whether the various buffer averaging proposals would be able to meet the criteria in the code for buffer averaging?
I think we reviewed the buffer averaging that was already proposed, and it seemed reasonable. We weren't going to expand the footprint of it. So we confirmed that we weren't proposing to modify anything outside of what was already proposed and approved.
Mm-hmm. And it was your understanding when you were looking at that preliminary plat that some form of buffer averaging had already been approved?
Yes.
Got it. So you said you when you were talking about the various changes that had taken place, I think since remand, mm-hmm. you mentioned the alignment of the spine road, and you also mentioned, I believe, altered the buffer lines. Does that sound?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to show you a picture. This is kind of a grainy picture, but it's the only place that I'm aware of in the record where it shows these two images side by side. Okay. And this is in the revised CBER decision. It has the original buffer mitigation plan and then the revised buffer mitigation plan that shows the various buffer takes and buffer gives and stuff like that.
Okay.
Were you involved in preparing the changes to the various buffer takes and so forth in between these two images?
Yes, I coordinated with the wetland biologists on that.
Okay. Can you tell me up here, you talked a little bit about this in your testimony just now, this sort of north area adjacent to wetland L2. And if you see that, you know, there's the bit of red and the bigger bit of orange.
Right.
And then the orange wraps down around here. And then over here, the red area has been expanded and then wraps all the way around. Can you explain why those changes were made?
We made those changes to maintain a 15-foot setback from any potential area that might have been considered impervious. So we pulled it 15 feet off of the access road that was required, and that set that line in that area in particular.
Okay. And then moving down, that's the right one. There we go. In this one, there's no red area down here.
Mm-hmm.
And then over here, there is.
Yep.
Do you know why that change was made?
Again, it was, I think originally, I'd have to ask, you'll have to ask the wetland biologist specifically why it wasn't included originally. But what we did was set it outside of the access road that is now being proposed down to that detention pond, so that that area would not be considered buffer and it would be mitigated for.
Okay. See, there are any other areas here? I don't think so. This is the horizontal plan view that you your company created, correct?
It is.
Yeah. Did I hear you correctly that you said that the spine road could still be moved a couple feet to the east?
Technically, yes. If we did that, you're pushing grading and everything else into that that buffer track 412 that's to provide buffer from the neighboring properties. We left that small 5-foot area in there to allow for the construction of, like I said, potentially retaining walls and also French drains in that area to pick up drains.
Mm-hmm.
So that would not be in that tract.
The track, that track would have to be adjusted.
Potentially, there'd be easements over it too. If we ended up with like the French Drain located within it, there would have to be some kind of maintenance easements over that track.
Have you performed any sort of assessment or formal analysis of exactly how far that road could be pushed over to the east?
It's basically what we push as far as we can at this point without having facilities out into that tract.
Oh, I know. I'm saying to determine feasibility, if your client were open to go into the process of modifying that tract, have you done any sort of analysis as to how far further to the east that road could be pushed?
I suppose you could move it probably. I don't know. We did not. I guess we did not. That's a short answer. We knew that if we went further into that, you're going to have the neighbors on that side are not going to like that. And we'd have to go through a whole nother process of modifying the plat. So we located it in a location that met the code requirements and minimized impacts to the tract.
Mm-hmm. You mean minimize impacts to the buffer?
To both, excuse me, that provided the buffer that was required by code, the 100 feet on that remand, provided a setback, and then also did not, that would minimize grading impacts and such in track 412, that the neighboring buffer, boundary buffer, or whatever you want to term it.
Okay. And you talked about originally there was a proposed to be a ditch on the eastern side, or on in this image, the right-hand side of the spine road. What was going to be the purpose of that ditch?
That was included in the original preliminary plat to kind of provide more of a rural character to this development. In this situation, the county allowed us to, excuse me, one thing, to eliminate the planter strip between the sidewalk or trail and the roadway, and also to remove the ditch and replace it with a French drain on that east side in order to minimize the road section width to allow us to provide the buffer and setback that was required.
Mm-hmm. And what is a French drain?
French drain?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a trench that's filled with washed rock, that free draining material, and there's typically a perforated pipe within it that will convey water that doesn't infiltrate or soak in, and it will convey anything else to another point.
And where would that other point be? Like where the water that goes in the French drain, where would that go?
It would replace the discharge that would have been from the ditch, so it'll eventually go down to P2. It'll be conveyed underneath the road, under Spine Road, and discharged to P2 or the buffer or someplace on that side of the road.
Okay. And if I am, let me just give me one moment here. These are some of the plans that we looked at last time. And that, if I'm reading these correctly, these plans, first they had water in that ditch flowing south from about the intersection of these two roads down to that catch basin.
Right.
And then also going down to around this point where the spine road curves.
Yes.
Right. That the ditch would go north. Would this French drain replace, I guess, the entirety of that length of the ditch, or just part of it, or what?
Just part of it, only within the areas that were modifying the road.
Mm-hmm. So what would happen to this ditch? As water, say, moved north, it would be in a ditch, mm-hmm. and then eventually it would hit this sort of material in the French drain and then sort of go along with that water, or what would happen?
No, we would pick it up in a catch basin with an inlet to pick up any runoff from the ditch,
mm-hmm.
And then that would be conveyed to the same point of discharge from the French drain and the ditch to the north.
I see. So this is a way of not changing the discharge point or anything like that. This is a way of just sort of allowing the road to scooch over a little more.
It is. And again, the discharge locations and the designs are still open for approval and discussion. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How that water is conveyed from east to west is still not approved.
Mm-hmm. You talked about doing a the rough cut of the road.
Yes.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Rough grading. It's getting the road close to where it's going to ultimately be the subgrade of the road, so they can go and install utilities at fairly close to where the final grades are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like it says, it's roughly where the road grade will be or the road subgrade will be.
Earlier, we heard testimony, and you can tell me if you disagree. I think it was Dr. Rosine on sort of generally how roads are constructed, where you dig down to competent material.
Not necessarily. I mean, if you have what you would have is rough grade it, and they typically will proof roll it to see if there are areas that are not structurally sound. In that case, you would have to over excavate if you found something that wasn't. But that's not typical. You can typically most of the soil, you have a generally an idea that the soils are going to be, and the geotechnical report will tell you this or not, that the soils are competent to hold the loading that is required for a roadway. If you do find materials that are not sufficient, then yes, you would have to over excavate and bring back structural fill. But normally that's not, that doesn't occur.
Maybe we misunderstood each other. I was just saying, I thought that I was asking because the first part of Dr. Rosine's testimony was that the first step would be to dig down to the competent material, which I understood generally to be the material you're then going to put your fill on top of. And so what did you think I meant?
No, I don't, that's not true. You would dig down to the level that, if unless you're talking about fill being the actual crushed rock road base or whatever you're using for road base material, that's the rough grade that I would. So you're only talking about roughly a foot below your final grade. So you'd cut down to that point and the geotech would inspect it. They would proof roll it and see if it looks like it's what they're wanting for a competent bearing material. Put in all your utilities, compact that, get that all installed, and then get the compact everything as required and bring back in your road base and paving material. So you're not over excavating a significant amount of material and then bringing back fill. The only time you would do that is if the native material, it does not support the roadway. And that's not typical unless it's an area that's identified.
I guess I'm sorry.
Yeah. We're not expecting that on the site.
You're not expecting what?
We're not expecting that on this site.
I'm sorry. I apologize. There might be a misunderstanding. So I'm just trying to establish you do cut down, right? You cut down, like you said, you're not going to put your road base or your bed of the road on top of topsoil, right?
Not on topsoil. You'd scrape the topsoil off for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And then you would cut the road from there to what cut or fill the road to whatever your subgrade. The subgrade will be the elevation of the material below. Basically, you look at your paving section, the pavement, the crushed rock, the top base, and all that stuff. So typically around a foot or so of material. You cut down to that grade. It's what your native material is going to be. That's the rough grade.
And do you compact that before you put the road material on top?
Sure. After all the utilities are in, yeah, everything that is compacted.
Okay. You were asked whether the specifications in the DECA report are the types of specifications that you typically rely upon. I'm just wondering, what did you understand there by typically?
If that's something that's on most of our projects, we get recommendations from the geotech on nearly every project. If, you know, most of the time it's fairly standard notes and material and construction recommendations. Sometimes there are specific requirements or suggestions for materials that they may provide depending on what the site conditions are.
Mm-hmm. And how many times in your career have you gotten specifications from a geotech or fill specifications for mimicking existing hydrologic conductivity?
I can't give you a number. I know I've seen several of them. I can't. And 5, 6, 7. I don't.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of specifications are normally in those?
Usually it's when you have a site that you're looking at LID features and you want to make sure that water is moving in a certain direction or that it maintains the conductivity that's there currently.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying in those kinds of projects, what do the specifications typically specify?
It's typically the soil composition, the how granular the soil is to allow a certain porosity.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of times it has to do with the organic mix that may be used on top of that, even to support plant growth and also allow, you know, water treatment. Those things are specified in the drainage manuals. And so there's any number of reasons why you would have a specific soils mix that's specified.
Mm-hmm. Do you normally get any sort of analysis of the permeability of those soils?
If we're doing LID features, we do a lot, all the time. If we're doing an infiltration system, they will excavate down to where we think the bottom of it's going to be and do a test on that to make sure that the porosity is fine. Or materials we're bringing back in to fill, like I said, for bioretention soils and rain gardens and those types of things. Those soils are tested and certified. So it happens. Yes.
Where do you get specifications on, like, that you're trying to achieve particular permeability?
The kind of what?
That you're trying to achieve a certain permeability?
Yes.
Besides begging, like, specifications specific to permeability.
Yeah, usually it's trying to hit a minimum, at least to say that you're exceeding a certain infiltration rate, say, so that you know that the design's going to work. Either that or you're trying to limit it within a range so that you have water treatment that's occurring. It's not going too fast or too slow.
I see. So you'll get sort of like a description of what the composition is and then sort of like guidelines for what your infiltration targets are.
Yes.
Sorry, I just lost the document I was looking at. Share my screen again. This is back to exhibit F17, the horizontal plan. Does the path adjacent to the spine road, does it need to be on top of the fill or could it be built some other way?
Generally, it's the sidewalk that's going to be built on top of the fill.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, would it be consistent with the standards that you're aware of to have it be built, say, on a boardwalk adjacent to the spine road?
I'm not aware of that being in their standards. Technically, it probably could. I don't know that it would be approvable by the county.
But do you know if it wouldn't?
I don't.
Okay. Did you get any permeability specs or infiltration guidelines from Terra Associates as to the infiltration targets you're trying to reach with this fill material?
No.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Schomburg.
Okay. Mr. Getchess, any questions?
No, thank you.
No questions. No questions. Okay, back to Ms. Quijas then.
Thank you. Yeah, just a few. And can everybody hear me? Just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Telligen asked you whether or not the spine road could be moved a few more feet to the east. And you describe that there's the right-of-way there and also the Hillbend neighborhood. Are there any other reasons that you would not move the spine road just a few more feet to the east?
If we moved it further to the east, maintain the same vertical alignment that we have, it's going to increase the cut on that upper side significantly. So there's going to be more walls are going to be required. That could cause some issues. If we don't and we raise the grade to match that east side, that's going to require more fill on the west in order to fill that out. So part of it is trying to get that roadway close. You can see on some of those sections, there's some cut and some fill. That was the intention, was to try to get it kind of a balance between the cut fill, so it's as close to or minimizing impacts on either side of the road. I think that in my understanding, if we move that road outside of the right-of-way that's proposed on the preliminary plat, that's going to require a whole nother process of modifying that, and also I'm not sure, I don't know where the condition came from, or if it was in response to some concerns from the neighbors. So there's a 50-foot buffer there, so that's a not a a small issue to deal with. So we tried to stay within the right-of-way as defined in the preliminary plat.
And you were involved in the prior appeal, is that right?
Yes.
And do you recall the condition that Examiner Marshall imposed on the remand requiring a 100-foot buffer between the location of the spine road and wetland P2?
I do.
The exhibit that we were looking at, exhibit F17, it showed 117 feet in between the spine road and the pedestrian pathway and wetland P2. Is that right?
Yes, it does.
And so from, does that design comply with Examiner Marshall's required condition on remand?
To my understanding, it does. It exceeds it.
Mr. Telligen asked you a few questions about the stormwater plan and the French drain that would go to the east of the spine road.
Correct.
What's the status of the stormwater infrastructure designs?
There was a submittal, I believe, back in April that is under review currently. We've discussed other modifications to that internally and with staff. So it's basically in review.
And is, you talked a little bit about the French drain that would be to the right. Is that design element incorporated into the plans that the county is reviewing right now?
I believe it is. I'd have to go back and look, but I believe it was in that set.
And you talked a little bit about LID. Can you explain what that acronym stands for?
Slow impact development. It's something that is required on sites now under current code that it involves any number of things, but mainly in we're looking at trying to infiltrate water where the soils support that, which is hit or miss in this area, because as testified previously, there's a lot of areas with till and that type of material that just is not conducive to that. But it is basically that, trying to get water back into the ground and minimize the impact of development on surface.
Are LID techniques required for this project?
They are encouraged, but they are not required. And the geotech report actually states that the soils are not generally not supportive of it. We are still providing the ponds that we're designing are, while we're not we're not modeling it as if it is infiltrating, we are not sealing the bottoms of those ponds. So in fact, they could infiltrate if it's possible, but the soils don't indicate a high enough infiltration rate to take that into account in our model. So at this point, we're not required to.
And you said you're not required, but encouraged, I believe is the word. Where is that encouragement?
I believe it's in the actual preliminary plat.
Is that the one from 2009?
It's either that or the development agreement, one of the two.
Will the spine road be dedicated to the county once the project is finished?
It will.
And is the pedestrian pathway that's adjacent to the spine road, is that a required part of development as well?
It is. It's required in the preliminary plat.
I have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sean Broy, for coming out on such short notice and doing really well. That's appreciated your testimony. And Ms. Quease, are you going to be the one to let us know if Chris Wright's going to be joining us, or should I be asking Ms. Koski?
I believe he will be joining us. If we could possibly extend our break to be 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, but
40.
I am not sure if Mr. Getches had any questions for Mr. Sharnbroy before we let him go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was redirect, but Mr. Getches, did you have some questions or? Oh, Mr. Can't hear you this time, Mr. Getches.
I think he's saying nope. No. Okay. All right.
No questions. Okay, good.
Yep. I had a couple. Okay. I said one or two. May I? Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Mr. Schaumbright, you testified that this met or exceeded the allowed buffer that Examiner Marshall allowed.
The buffer itself is 100 feet. The setback from it is exceeded, yes.
Yeah, but I believe you say it exceeded what she allowed.
I was referring to the setback of that was shown 17 feet, and I believe the setback that was discussed was 15. So that was what I was referring to.
The 15-foot setback, not the 100-foot buffer.
True, yes.
Okay, thanks.
That it, Mr. Telger?
Yeah.
Okay, looks like Ms. Quihe, any redirect again?
No, thank you.
Okay, all right. We're adjourned until 2:30 then.
If we could actually, apologies for making it longer, but if it could be a 45-minute break, I would appreciate it just to give me some time to confirm with Mr.
Okay. All right, like I said,
Is my sound still not working or?
No, now I can hear you.
Okay, because yeah. I did have one question for, I wasn't saying no questions, I was saying one question for Mr. Schaumbroy.
Okay, well, Mr. Schaumbroy is still there. All right, go for it.
Well, remember all the discussion about the gabion and the energy dissipator?
Yes.
Is that still a part of the plan that's being reviewed?
It is. It's been relocated further to the outer edges of the buffer now. And I think every instance, except for maybe one where the grades won't allow it. So in P2 specifically, it's been moved and relocated, but that is still part of the design.
Okay, but now it's much further east?
East and north, I believe.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Okay. Ms. Squeeze, the final redirect? No. Nope. Okay. All right. You're saying 3 o'clock then?
If nobody objects, I believe we'll be able to finish with Mr. Wright before 4:30.
Okay. All right. We'll come back at 3 then.